And our special guest tonight, Mellon Thomas Benedict, he died and came back. Up next, some of his prophecy on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Mellon Thomas Benedict right here on Coast to Coast AM. And Mellon, this experience had a profound effect on you to the point that you have now picked up, and I don't know whether it was just knowledge or was it guidance, where you've learned things about, you know, the future, earth changes, your own life, destiny for all of us. Are you almost like on a mission?
Well, I'm on a mission of health and also a mission of what is called self-initiation. We're coming into a period now where, especially, you know, the example is, what just happened to the economy. Why are we all listening to these people? Why did we listen to them? They turned out they didn't know that much, and they were manipulating us. And I think a lot of huge mistakes were made. So we're coming into a point now of self-initiation, and that's if I'm on any mission, it's to create heaven on earth.
Well, you're getting there now. Are there other people like you out there doing the same thing? Is this almost like an army of people that have died and have come back?
Well, in one of my visits with the light, I was told that the near-death experience, this is, you know, way back then, I was told that the near-death experience would become more and more popular and it would have an effect on the entire world when a critical mass was hit where all these people have died and come back. And are telling you that it's, you know, there's a lot more going on than what we think. It's getting over the fear of death is one of the first phases of self-initiation, because once you get over the fear of death and realize that you have been alive forever already and you will be alive forever no matter what, in fact, no one can manipulate you. The old fears don't manipulate you anymore. Although I have no fear of death, I respect life more and more. I used to skydive and rock climb and all that, and after my near-death experience, I respect life so much that I wouldn't dare take a chance on throwing it away on something so frivolous. So it's given me respect for life, not a fear. And as we move into the future, we're going to start realizing that this whole thing about prophecy is most of. I was told when I'm with the light that all the true ancient prophecies will end in our lifetime, and they will be no more. And they all have to deal with the end of the world, don't they?
They sure do.
And we're going to get past that point of this end of the world. And in fact, you know, the end of the world has a history. People should check it out. How many times have prophets told people there was going to be an end of the world?
Every civilization. You know, everyone.
and also the odd thing about prophecy is that most prophets have not ever been right. And in fact, if they get one thing right in their life, that's a career. And do you know who's been more accurate about predicting the future than prophets?
I would say, well, this is a quiz, right? But I would say Edgar Cayce was one of them.
He was interesting, but there have been people more accurate than him.
And Nostradamus?
No, not at all.
Quatrains?
Not at all. I was shown that the people that have been the most accurate about predicting the future have been the fantasy writers.
Good point.
They have been more accurate than anybody. And I was given a lesson of, say, Jules Verne. Remember
right.
Jules Verne?
Absolutely.
And in my book, it's called The Jules Verne's Effect. And I was shown that Jules Verne wrote about things that did not exist. Technologies did not exist in his time. And all the children that read those books went out, invented those things and more. Isn't that interesting?
But something happened to him, Mellon. I don't know whether he was a time traveler or a remote viewer or what, but something happened to him to allow him to have a vision of the future.
Absolutely. And so I was also taught about Star Trek, the Star Trek effect on the planet. Who was it? Gene Roddenberry.
Gene Roddenberry.
Unbelievable the material he pulled in. And I was shown that at any given moment on planet Earth now, Star Trek is being shown somewhere. And it's constantly in consciousness. And I was told that everything you see on Star Trek will be manifested, and the children that watch this will make all of that, including the replication technologies, all of that is coming, and some of it's here now.
Or absolutely. I mean, during even though Dick Tracy had that watch he talked into, Star Trek also had those little handheld devices that were like cell phones.
And didn't they heal with light, too, amazingly fast?
Absolutely.
So the thing about prophecies is that we've got to get over this end-of-the-world stuff and get past it. I was also shown, and I honestly believe most biblical scholars know this, and some of them tell you the truth, is that most of the prophecies you've ever heard about, the ancient ones, already have happened. They were written for people in their own times and were fulfilled in their own times.
But this is what concerns me about prophecy, though. In end times, eventually one of them is going to get it right.
Well, there is not going to be an end times, and that's why this is all going to end within the next couple of generations. We're going to actually transform. This is why the near-death experience is really big on helping us transform. And we're going to transform over the next 75 to 100 years into completely different creatures than we know now.
Is it going to be gradual? Or?
Well, it's been gradual. In fact, the amazing thing that I was shown is that we're technically there now. We're at a time that's never happened before in history. We're technically at a time in history where we can transcend survival en masse. We can technically clothe, comfort, feed and educate every human on Earth right now. And this has never happened before, and it will continue to grow. And so we're in a most beautiful time, actually, although, you know, there's still a lot of all kinds of people trying to manipulate us, but that's been from day one. And manipulation is something that all of nature does, by the way. Flowers do it, trees do it, bugs do it, you know, all God's creatures do it. We always try to manipulate things to our benefit. So, trying to manipulate things is as natural as it gets.
No, but when you say, Mellon, we're not going to have end times. Don't worry. This is not going to get... But you're not saying we're not going to get hit by an asteroid one day or some kind of life-threatening thing happens to us, right?
I was shown the mass potential of the Earth, and the beautiful thing is, no, we will not. The interesting thing is that the Earth will die, though. The sun will die and the Earth will die eventually, and we have about another good 10,000 years on Earth. But in the next 400 years, we will begin star seeding other planets. We're like the little birds that can't stay in the nest forever. Our manifest destiny is to take life with us into the stars.
As they did probably with us, maybe.
Yes, as where we came from originally. And so this is our manifest destiny. And believe me, once we have the replication technologies and diamonds and gold don't mean anything anymore, and free energy is a metaphor for free spirit. It's not actually being suppressed like people think, because when a time is right for an idea, nothing can suppress it. So free energy...
Even if they try.
Even if they try. Just like, you know, all the blacksmiths tried to hold back the automobile and they couldn't. So when the time is right, and the time is more right than ever at this point for these new energy devices to come out, and believe me, if we don't do it, China will, somebody will. And so these are all about to pop out in the next 50 years, and probably in the next 5 or 10 years, actually, we'll be seeing these things. And they're that close to manifesting and being here. So the future, so free energy is about free spirit. Are we ready to be free? If we are, then all these ideas that represent freedom will manifest.
Did you, prior to the near-death experience, did you have this outlook of life? I don't think you did you?
No, I didn't. And I believe the world was a very dangerous, negative place. I believe that the world was going to end in my lifetime. And I believed humans were dark and evil. And
some are.
I have seen people that you might consider evil. But then I asked this question on the other side. I asked, why are humans so dark and evil? And the light turned into a mandala, if you know what that is, or like one of those big round cathedral windows.
Right.
It turned into a mandala of human souls, and I was taken into it. And I was allowed, it seemed like, to look into every human soul, including my own. And I tell you, I saw no evil whatsoever. And then I was shown something incredible. The next thing the light showed me was the great and mighty mosquito. Did you know that the mosquito to this day kills and ravages human beings and animals more than all the human wars on Earth?
Absolutely. And I still wonder what its purpose is.
And the light asked me, is the mosquito evil? No, it is not.
Other than being food for, let's say, birds and stuff, what does it do?
Exactly. And you can say there are some humans that are that way.
True.
You see what I mean?
Absolutely.
So the great and mighty mosquito has had more of an effect on humanity and history than people even imagine. And to this day, if you check World Health, it's still the biggest killer of humanity on Earth.
Would you call yourself spiritual or religious right now?
Well, I'm not religious at all, but I do have a great spiritual life now, but it is not at all religious.
Have you put together that thought process of how we got here, and you know, even though you said earlier there's no plan here, but what put it all together? There had to be this godlike figure somewhere, this divine intervention, something somewhere is intelligent behind all this design, don't you think?
Well, I can only tell you what the light has shared with me, and that I was told that the universe is not an intellectual exercise, and that if you try to understand it intellectually, you will miss it. It's like a rainbow. If you're only looking at purple, say intellectual, you're going to miss all the rest. Or if you're only down in red, you know, hedonism, partying, then you're going to miss all the rest of it. The universe was not, it was not a intellectual exercise, and so if you try to look through it through that lens, you will not understand it. You will understand some of it, but you will not understand the fullness of it. You have to look at the whole rainbow. And so we're just beginning to understand that. And that even the concept of no beginning and no end seems mysterious to us.
Sure.
But that is the truth. There was no beginning and there is no end to this. And in fact, the very body you're in right now, if you just look at your hand, your body has already been alive forever. It didn't come from anything dead.
We're made with stardust, aren't we?
We are. We're absolute pure stardust, and that is always in creation and recreation. So it actually is incredibly wonderful and mystical and magical in that way, and that we can't understand everything at this point is part of our process, and that we may. The other gift we've been given is that you may never ever find out everything. And there will always be a mystery. And I have come to love mysteries. I don't try to know everything now. In fact, I crossed a line many years ago where I know too much. And I tell people, whatever ignorance you have left, cherish it. You will miss it when it's gone.
It's kind of good to be inquisitive once in a while, though.
I love a mystery, yes.
Are you bullish on our future?
I'm very, very positive. We have been through these cycles many, many times before, but they just get—they tend to get bigger and bigger now because we're a global society. Now it's a global issue, and I think as Peter Russell has said, issues are soul size now, and everything we do affects everyone else. And this is also what's going to pull us together like never before.
Of all the prophets or the psychics that you've dealt with in your life, people that you know about, is there anybody that impresses you?
I'm not really into psychics and stuff like that, actually. Gene Roddenberry still blows my mind.
Right.
And Edgar Cayce, and I've been to the Edgar Cayce Center and lectured there and reviewed his materials. He was amazing. And there are amazing people like that around that can retrieve information, useful information that can help you. But I don't, well, what I learned on the other side is that what people call psychic really isn't psychic. It turns out that the most psychic part of yourself is your first brain. It looks like the reptilian brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that is because everything is psychic, from bacteria to you. And that is what we call psychic ability is actually located in the lower brain. And it was originally a survival mechanism to sense danger, sense water, and it all has to do with the very natural process of what you might think is psychic. And a friend asked me once, because I told him something, "You must be psychic." And I said, "No, you don't have to be psychic to smell the fish."
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
But
you're perceptive.
Yeah, and so when someone says they're psychic and they just tell me what I already know, like my car is green or this, that, and the other, that's not psychic. That's called telepathy, wireless communication, which is one of the easiest thing to do is read someone's mind and go through their files. And people seem to be blown away if you can tell them something they already know. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. And by the way, tell me about what you've been saying lately about feeding the world, which one day is going to be very important.
Yes. In my book, it's called Tricks with Fish. And remember the story of Jesus on the mountain feeding the masses with the fish.
This is
replication technology that's coming in. In the future, in the not too distant future, we will be able to replicate food as much as we want. In fact, in the future, we don't drill for water anymore. The people of the future go, "We drill in the ground for water. We just make water any way we want." We, in what you might call replicators, and you can make it. It's all natural because there's only nature in the universe, electrons and atoms. And so that literally the things that you've seen on Star Trek replicating food and water is quite common in the future, and there is no shortage of anything, which really takes us out of survival. And once we're out of survival, you don't need oil companies, you don't need kings, you don't need any of that stuff. So Tricks with Fish, or feeding the world, is actually going to become easier and easier. And the techniques, you won't even see big farms in the future. They disappear.
Interesting. I've always thought we should create and build, Mellon, a huge dehumidifier that sucks water out of the atmosphere.
Oh, totally possible. Totally possible. There's no end to energy, really, and the way we can manipulate it. And you can make water any way you want it. The amazing thing is that we could be in desalination right now, big time, for everybody that lives near the coast. I mean,
we should be. Why aren't we?
Well, Europe's already doing it. You know, there's these giant ships that have been built.
Right. Saudi Arabia is doing it.
Spain, they bring these ships in, park them right at the dock, and they're huge desalination plants that supply whole cities.
L.A. should be doing it.
Well, all of California should be doing it.
Absolutely. Well, they'll probably be forced to do it.
They will be. That's another interesting thing about nature and the universe is that change happens when it's necessary. There's a resistance factor that I appreciate in the universe, and even the fundamentalists represent a resistance factor. There's a resistance factor in everything, a push-pull effect. But when critical mass is hit, the change will happen.
That's with life, too.
Absolutely.
Isn't it, Mellon?
And it'll happen in your life. It'll happen in California. And when the time is right, boy, it just happens.
Yep.
Sometimes we push it a bit far and we suffer a little bit before we make the change. But you can take the positive course or the negative course to get there, but they both lead to the same place.
Take a moment before the break to tell us about your books and where you can get them.
Thanks.
We're Journey Through the Light and Back, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Other Side. Both available still, Mellon?
Yes. Well, we're in pre-order now. And they'll actually be out in about 3 months. But, the publishers and everybody, they do these pre-order things. So it'll be out soon.
Very good. Mellon-Thomas.com is the website. So do you travel much, speaking engagements?
I try not to. I'm not really a teacher. I love teachers and saints. I'm neither. And I'm really a shaman. And my real mission is bringing in practical application of higher consciousness. I do like entertaining people, and I will in the future do more of that. I believe we can entertain through multimedia and make things real fun.
Good point. We'll be back with more. Let's get into life after death, reincarnation, in just a moment. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. You can chat with Mellon, and also perhaps share some of your near-death experience stories with us. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Mellon Thomas Benedict. I'm George Norrie. This, of course, is Coast to Coast AM. Mellon, how do we really know that there is life after death? What if there was just some bizarre experience that, you know, you really weren't dead, but your mind created this dream image of what happened? How do we know?
Well, I think you have to find out for yourself, honestly. It's like anything else. Until you've had the experience, you will know. And we have more and more people now reporting the same experience. And it's one of those things where you have to try it for yourself.
you got to be there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, reincarnation, something that I've always believed in. I don't know why I've always believed it, but how about you?
Well, you know, I never even heard of the concept, basically, until I you know, I was educated by the Light. The Light said that, you know, almost every culture on Earth believes in some form of reincarnation, including Christians.
True.
And what I was shown was that the spiritual explanation, or the New Age explanation, or the spiritual explanation of reincarnation is rather flimsy. But the quantum mechanics and the quantum physics are solid, and this will be a science in the future. And so I was educated on the quantum nature of the reality of reincarnation, and that this is more real and more dynamic than people imagine.
Do you think that we should all live for the moment?
Oh, sure, because, you know, it's been said many times, you know, and I'll put it my way, there is no past, there is no future. It is always going to be now. It's always now. So when we learn to live in the now, not live in some perceived past or some perceived future, the now becomes perfect, and then the past and the present can be perfect. And as far as the past goes, history, all the history books are always changing. If you're a history scholar, you know the story of history is always changing. It's not set in stone at all. And, of course, the history books are written by the winners. So the myth of a past is an illusion. And one interesting thing is that if you look around you today, we still have Stone Age people living with us. The past, you know, what we call the past, is still in the now. We have the Aborigines. We also have people that are more advanced than we are on the planet. That you might call them futurists. They're living here now. We have dinosaurs are still living with us in one form or another. You know, birds and things like mm-hmm. that. It's all here now. The past, the present, and the future are here right in front of us. We just don't notice it.
Science is beginning to talk, Mellon, about multiverses now, more than the dimensions we believe exist. If you've been there, you might believe, I would assume, that there are many more dimensions out
there.
Well,
it's actually very interesting. There are, but understand this, too, that you can create new dimensions just by thinking about them, and that is all thoughts are quanta. All thoughts are real, physical things. And it turns out there is nothing metaphysical in the universe. It's all physical or superphysical. And so your thoughts are true quanta. And so just having a new thought creates a new dimension. So that's like, you know, chasing the tiger by its tail. You know, it's one of those things where did I create this dimension or was it there before I created it? You see what I mean? It becomes very, very trippy, doesn't it?
And what came first?
Yes, the chicken or the egg.
The angels that were there when you died, can you summon them at any moment?
I love this part because most of the angels that we know or or experience are angels that we created with our prayers and our desires. We actually can create angels, and we create them when we need them. And then the minute the crisis passes, we forget them. So, but we've created them, and they are not uncreated. So there's an awful lot of angels that have been created and looking for work.
What about the fallen angels? Did you ever learn about that when you were on the other side?
Yes, and you know, that's a mental myth of that's an intellectual mind myth. No one has fallen. That kind of thing is just a myth of an intellectual mind that basically is a division. The one thing I saw was is, you know, there's always supposed to have been this battle between the children of the dark and the children of the light. And what that is, what that really, really means, as it was explained to me, is that there is still this division between the conscious and the subconscious, the animal nature of ourselves and the super part of ourselves. And a good metaphor for this that people overlook is the story of Cain and Abel. And I was shown in all the religions what all these metaphors meant. And in the story of Cain and Abel, Cain represented the body, the biology, the animal part of our nature. And, of course, Cain didn't understand, didn't have a good concept of God, and always worked hard and had the lower, what we call the lower nature, but it isn't. It was sacred. And then you have Abel, who was the basic star child, the upper brain. And everything came easy to it, and, in fact, to the upper brain, it thinks it created the universe. But the lesson was, and this is the mind-body connection in health, is that if you have a battle going on between your subconscious and your conscious, say your subconscious believes money's not good for some reason, and the conscious wants money, you're going to have a difficult time manifesting. There's going to be a struggle there. But the other thing is the self-talk people do when they talk bad to themselves. You know, I have a friend who plays tennis, and every time he makes a mistake, he says, "Oh, you stupid ass," or, you know, you're ignorant. And he puts his body down. Well, you can actually create a resistance between your subconscious and your conscious, and I'll tell you what, the subconscious will always win. It will take you down. And the example is that Cain killed Abel. It's like this. It's a very strong message to learn that, and the kahunas teach this the best, I think, you know, the Polynesian kahunas, which I love. They teach this the best. They tell you to get to know yourself. You have a what we call a subconscious, a conscious, and a superconscious. And the biggest leap we're ever going to make is just a few millimeters from the lower brain to the higher brain to get that bridge together where they're working in unison. And even the metaphor in the Bible says, "Where any two of you ask in my name, and it shall be manifest." That's when you get the subconscious and the conscious mind understanding each other, and they get in link, and they become coherent like a laser beam, and manifestation can happen. If we could manifest anything willy-nilly in an incohesive way, this would be a chaotic, dangerous world to live in. You know, if your neighbor's dog was barking, you go, the dog disappears. The truth is that there's a natural way to manifest and a manifestation, and that is you've really got to get to know yourself, and you can change yourself. If your subconscious believes money is bad and your conscious wants it, well, you have to understand why your conscious wants it and also work with your subconscious to correct those wrong programs that we have that were hardwired probably before you were 6 years old about life and these things. And so that's one of the biggest things you can do is get to know yourself and become harmonious with yourself. And you're going to find then that manifestation and getting what you truly want can happen much easier. You know, quite often I had a friend who wanted to manifest a Corvette, and he lived in a trailer. And he manifested the Corvette, but then he couldn't afford to put gas in it. You see? So
always that, consequences, huh?
Yes. And so the battle of the sons of light and the sons of darkness is really a metaphor for what's going on inside of ourselves. And the whole thing about, you know, the 666, if you've got to carry that all the way over, because it came from numerology, and then you've got to add the 666 together, which is 18, which is 9, and that's the number of man. So the beast is within us.
deeply within us too.
And we're evolving and we're coming into the light more and more. You know, there was a great period in the beginning of what we might think is the star period, but before the star period, there was no light at all. So there's great. There was great periods of no light at all, and the star period, which we live in now, is a relatively new period to be in. And so we go way back, even before the star period, in our being, because we've always been here, and we've always been a part of this experience. So it's kind of interesting to think about.
You've done some work about pets and people we care about. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, it's very, very possible to see loved ones and visit with them and communicate with them and or see them on the other side. Pets become part of us. They become literally a part of us, and many pets actually take on your illness for you. Isn't that interesting? We've seen
sure
it many
is.
Times. Your pets become a part of you, and they will always be a part of you. What the ancients knew, and I've been to third world countries where they honor the ancestors, and they still have a relationship with their ancestors. So even if someone has died, made the transition, you can still have a relationship with that person or that pet. You know, I've had three great dogs in my life. They're all dead now, and it'll be a while before I get a new one. But I still have a relationship with those pets. They still visit me. I can still feel when they jump in the bed with me at night, and I love it. And also, the good thing about pets is, and you can do this with loved ones too, you can reincarnate them again. And I have done this, and I teach in one of my workshops. If you want to get a pet back, you can. You can call it in, and it will.
And you don't have to clone it either.
No, you don't have to clone it. You can get your pet back, and I teach people how to do this. It's the same thing with humans. If you want to be in the same family, you'll quite often find that the grandchild will probably be that parent that died before. And so all this is very possible and very cool. And also, you don't have to reincarnate with anybody you don't want to reincarnate with again, and that's called the end of karma. You don't have to repeat these things.
Well, you know, I think what's amazing with reincarnation are some of the stories that are out there. I remember one where a little boy in the Chicago area claimed that he was a downed World War II pilot. And, you know, he knew about his partner, his co-pilot, everything. It's just an amazing story. There's got to be some truth behind it.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's fun to practice is we need to learn how to die conscious and be born conscious and not lose conscious, because most people, when they hit the light, they go unconscious and go into an automatic cycle of reincarnation in which you're pulled back to the exact polarities that you left with. In other words, you may not actually reincarnate with the same families, but you'll reincarnate with people with the same matrix you had, whether it be, you know, positive or negative. It's very possible, and I think everyone should practice how to die conscious and then be born conscious. That's going to really speed up evolution dramatically.
I
plan to do this. In fact, on my tombstone, I want it written, "Leave a message, I'll be right back."
He sure will be. Hey, Melon, of everything that you have experienced now in the course of this entire incredible journey, what's the one thing you've really pulled out of this that has affected you personally the most?
Well, can I read you a short poem? It's the first poem that I wrote after my near-death experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
It's called Invocation of Ecstasy. It's the first poem I wrote, and it is still my main vibration. And it goes like this. We who are here now are the creations of the first word. We who are here now are the rays of the first light. We who are here now are the star seed from the first garden. Let us open our hearts and look again. Just for a minute, let us open our hearts and let love rise more than we ever have before. Maybe even a little more than we ever thought possible. Look again. For deep in every human soul there is a knowing that all life is a gift beyond measure. that love, yes, love, is the heart, the breath, and the meaning of life. May there always be more love. May there always be more life. And may we all thrive and live forever, again and again and again. Oh, dear universe, I love my life.
Well said. And that has changed you.
Absolutely.
What do we say to people who haven't experienced what you've experienced? They haven't died. They haven't gone to the other side yet. They're entitled to have this kind of life now. They're entitled to know what you know. What do they do?
Everyone has direct access. Everyone is directly connected to the source that we all are. And there are many ways to get there. There are many ways to experience it. It is as natural as breathing. It's as natural as sunlight. What we have to realize is that we all do have that direct connection. And some can do it through meditation. Some can do it through song and dance. Some can do it. There's a million ways to do it. And no one is ever cut off or ever will be cut off from the source that we come from. And then to really focus it, we must, and this is a lesson I had to learn, you must come into a space where you love your life, and then everything can flow. And when I was told that by the light, I thought it was the most impossible thing in the world. How can I love my life? How? That's impossible. But I came to that point, and I love my life, and I always will.
People sense this when they meet you, too, don't they?
I think so, because this is what I really am, and I try to bring this grace everywhere I go, although I am very much an imperfect human being, believe me, and I'm capable of just as many mistakes as anyone else, but I do, in my essence, carry this energy, and it really calms people down, and it seems to have an effect on people that's positive.
If, God forbid, you have another one of these experiences, do you want to stay on the other side, Melon, or do you want to come back?
No, we always come back, and I can't wait to get back, and because, you know, the other side's not all it's cracked up to be.
No, that's
there's
true,
a lot
too.
You can't do on the other side, and there's a perfect combination, though. A body without spirit is a wasteland, and a spirit without a body is a wasteland. And we are the perfect matrix of body and spirit. And with body and spirit, you can have it all.
You can have it all.
You can.
Yeah, you probably can. Let's get back just a few minutes about the health thing that you were talking about. George Burns lived, what, 100 years old, smoked cigars. What was it about his makeup that allowed that to happen?
Well, very little of it, and this is one of my major interests and studies over the last 27 years or so. Very little of it, maybe 3%, has anything to do with genetics, and most people whose parents lived to be 100, they don't. But if you look at the three main things that people that actually lived to be 100 have, diet is not a common factor because the diets are all over the ballpark. Dentistry is number one. Dentistry has been the plague of mankind because it poisons you. So 100-year-olds have good teeth or no teeth. And in Europe, like the Paracelsus Clinic, they can pull teeth and cure cancer.
Good point. I mean, I used to remember going to the dentist, and they'd ask you if you had a heart murmur or any kind of problems because the bacteria could kill you.
And so that's been the plague of mankind and our pets, too. So anything you can do to take care of your teeth is the best investment you can make. The second thing about 100-year-olds is, and forgive me for saying this, they stay away from doctors. Now, I've forgiven every doctor I ever thought was a jerk because we have to think about how we treat doctors. But the truth is that you shouldn't be a hypochondriac and you don't need to go get a flu shot. And I'm not giving any medical advice here, by the way. But they're not hypochondriacs. You have pains in your life. And a lot of the pains and aches in our lives are self-induced by all the little things that we do over a lifetime. And the third thing, which is really important, is people that live to be 100 have watched all their children and their friends die before them. These people always have something to live for.
Good point. Back with calls next.